Welcome back to the Missing Maura Murray podcast. I am Tim, here tonight with Lance. Lance, how are you?
Feeling awesome. How are you?
Yeah, this is great. I feel rejuvenated. Obviously, episode one of The Disappearance of Maura Murray aired on Saturday, September 23rd on Oxygen Network, and seemed like everyone really liked the episode. There was some information that came out that was really intriguing to a large amount of the audience. How'd you think it went?
I think it went great. And all of the feedback has been, for the most part, very, very positive. I'd say the majority of the feedback has been very positive. There has been a lot of information that's come out. There's been some of the same information that's coming to the surface again, but doesn't it feel different? Don't the comments that are happening right now with the TV show feel different than the comments when we first started doing the podcast? I feel like the new audience that has come on is fitting right in with the audience that has stuck with us during the podcast.
Boy, I'll tell you, the comments are coming in fast and furious to both the family Facebook page and also the Facebook podcast discussion group. I've never seen it this active. So I would say, yes, it feels different because there's not enough time for fighting almost. There's too many questions, and it's people clarifying what the questions are. And there's really... People are doing well with this because they're not fighting. It's nice.
Back when we did the previous episode, we were talking about how, you know, comparing it to, you know, just like the whole journey. And it felt like we were going into another chapter in the whole story of this. And I did not expect the comments are coming fast and furious, and they don't have a lot of time to argue. And maybe I'm wrong, but I think that any arguing point that comes up has a counterpoint that has already been out there based on previous podcasts or previous posts by various people like John Smith or Alex or even James Renner. So the new audience comes in and they look at, you know, the episode, and then they comment on something, and there's an instant directory to check this out over here. And then I feel like that just puts the fire out before the fire begins, which is really cool.
So we're gonna read some questions here from maybe our email inbox, but we're also going to play the live show that we did. It was a Facebook Live after show that we did for Oxygen, and we're doing another one this Saturday night after episode two airs. So make sure to check that out on Oxygen on Facebook. We'll try to forward the link out on Twitter and Facebook. But it all happens really quickly, just so you know. We were kind of freaking out right before and during and after this Facebook Live event.
Yeah, because we were... It's amazing to me because we're not in the TV industry, and I guess we just have a perception of how the TV industry operates. And 20 minutes before the show ended, you and I are talking about this live show, which we had talked to the network about for a long time. And we were just, the instructions we were given was very, very casual. And you and I, like, I don't know, because it's new to us, we get, like, our anxiety is raised, and the people from the network, this is just their day-to-day business. So they give us the instructions to go on the Facebook Live, and we're not sure exactly how to do it. And then all of a sudden this note, this reminder, this little advertisement pops up on the screen of the TV, and it says, "Join Tim and Lance for Facebook Live," and it instructs people to go to this, and we're like, "What?"
I guess we have to do it now.
I guess we have to go do this right now. you start thinking, there's like a lot of people watching this show. And if anybody notices a couple of moments of awkwardness, I'll explain them right now. During the conversation, while we were answering questions, which felt like a nonstop, nonstop waves hitting us with the question. We knew that we had to keep it to about like 20 minutes. So I think both of us felt like we had to answer the questions as fast as possible to move on to the next question. I felt like everything coming out of my mouth just sounded like it didn't sound like anything.
No, it did. It sounded exactly like that.
Right. Also, I had my elbows on the table, and Tim kept putting his finger around my elbow. In his head, that was his signal for me to take my elbows off the table, because I tend to talk with my hands a little bit, and it was shaking the computer, which was shaking the screen. I thought he was telling me to get closer to the microphone, like my levels weren't picking up or something. So when you see that awkward moment, that's the explanation. And apparently Tim is a fan of Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs and breeds moths, because those started to attack my face while we were doing this. So next Saturday, all the kinks will be worked out. Ask your questions. We'll be looking forward with no moths and no elbows on the table.
And there is video of this. We will play it on our YouTube page, so you can check that out. I cut the part where I scolded you during the live show about your elbows on the desk and why I kept telling you to, or why I kept touching your elbow. Because at one point I just came out and just said, I'm touching your elbows, so you take them off the desk. But then you didn't take them off the desk.
I talk. I have my elbow on the table and I use my hands. I like to put them up and talk. Maybe you should get a computer that's got some bass to it.
It's my computer's problem. Let's get into a couple of the issues that came up. Like, I was kind of trying to track the audience over the past few days and kind of trying to figure out, zero in on what issues they found most important from the first episode. And we talk about them a little bit in the live show, but we can go a little more in depth here, or maybe try to clarify a little bit. So the first one is that the police didn't speak with Julie Murray. That was what Julie said, that she never spoke to police. They never asked her to speak to police.
Right. We have Julie Murray saying that she was never interviewed by police. So the most we can get in depth on that is maybe someone's definition of interview and a couple of questions is different. But Julie did say during the episode, after being asked, police never spoke to you? And she said, nope.
One of the things we were able to get clarification on is did Maura email death in her family or family emergency? Maura emailed that she had a death in her family to her professors, but told the people in person, that includes Karen Mayotte, her boss, and Aaron, who is going to be in episode 2, there's a clip that's on Oxygen's site from episode 2. Aaron says that Maura said family emergency and said my sister. So that's two accounts now of my sister. So interestingly, Maura tells her professors death in the family. So that's a lie to her professors. But who hasn't lied to their professors about, trying to get out of class, or their teachers? My God, everyone has. So, but she potentially tells the truth, for all we know, to the people she talked to in person and on the phone.
The thing you have to keep in mind is that we keep saying how unreliable eyewitness testimony is, and we're talking about somebody from years ago who's probably maybe read something that says death in the family or says this or that, and they might say, yeah, she said family emergency. Maybe she said it or maybe she didn't. It's a little too heavy to rely on, and we haven't seen any emails, as far as I know, that actually say that she says death in the family to her professors. So the emails to her professors, according to the law enforcement, said death in the family, and the people that are the witnesses to her, they give the account that she said family emergency. I don't know if we're like going into the minutiae of the details of this conversation. Are we splitting hairs too much? Does it even matter? But it could be one thing, it could be another. But it's been so long, it's really hard to tell without seeing something in print with a date.
And Maggie told us that Chuck West from the New Hampshire State Police Cold Case Unit read it to her and Art, read Maura's email to her professors, and it said death in the family. She said they did not see them, but he read it in their presence. So if you haven't viewed the first episode, it is available on Oxygen's website. We will put the link in our show notes. So check out episode 2 on Oxygen Network this Saturday night. Check your local listings for episode 2. We're getting deeper now.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your jobs to find the best candidates?
It's so important to find the right talent for that position, Lance. And with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within one day.
There's no juggling emails or calls to your office. You simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results.
And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/MMM.
That's ZipRecruiter.com/MMM. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/MMM.
Hey, everybody. This is Tim and Lance from the Missing Maura Murray podcast talking about what happened in episode 1 of the disappearance of Maura Murray on the Oxygen Network. I am Tim. This is Lance.
How's everybody doing tonight? This was a really good episode. This far exceeded my expectations.
Yeah.
To be honest. Aside from it just looking beautiful.
Yep.
It looks beautiful.
Yes.
The information that they packed into the first episode is almost overwhelming, which just means like, yeah, we're going to sift through all of this in the next 5 episodes, which is exactly what the case needs.
So they covered a lot of ground. They talked to Fred Murray, talked to Julie Murray. Obviously, we're in there. They talked to James Renner. Obviously, it's still kind of set up stuff, right? Is there any inkling on where it's going? What do you think about where Maggie and Art are taking this?
Well, I think what they have to do is present all of the theories and scenarios that are out there right now, because yep, those are the things that need to be dissected and trimmed away. You know, the noise needs to be cleared up, mm-hmm, and they need to figure out what needs to kind of boil down into the facts. So it's a good setup for the rest of the series.
Okay. So we're going to take some questions.
All right. Who do we got?
So let's see. So how can I see the episode? Check out oxygen.com. Otherwise, maybe iTunes or Vudu. I was really shocked that Julie said that the police had not talked to her
right
in all these years. Julie, obviously, Maura's sister. So she's one of the closest people to Maura in the world. And the police did not talk to her in 13 and a half years.
Right. That's one of the things that's kind of inexplicable at this point. Why the police would start the investigation and not and speak to Fred.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know, having siblings, you know that you don't tell like your parents the hard secrets, right?
Mm-hmm.
You need to you usually talk to your siblings. So that is a little bit strange that they never once considered just basic questions to Julie.
People here are talking about the police having dropped the ball on the case.
is that what happened here? Is that what you think happened because they didn't interview Julie, or is there a better reason for this?
Let's look at some of these questions here, because they're coming through pretty rapidly right now.
They really are. So is this a docuseries? Yes, this is 6 episodes. It's an investigatory series, so it's going to keep going forward each episode. James Renner's theories seem extremely far-fetched. Do you all agree with him?
I don't think it's a matter of agreeing or not agreeing. You have to look at what's obvious, right? You have to look at what's obvious in what the trip, like the actual trip that she took. You have to go back a little bit and say, is it relevant, the things that happened in her life beforehand, and how much do you just take of that as someone who is a early 20s young woman, and is that relevant? So, I mean, there is a lot of things that you can let your creativity and your imagination run away with you.
Yeah.
Because we don't have any answers up to this point.
Right. Police sometimes consult psychics, from Deb. Would they ever consult one? And they definitely have consulted many psychics.
I don't believe the police have consulted psychics. Okay, the family has.
Good question. Yeah, good point. The investigation has consulted many psychics, and so I'm not sure about the police. We can't say for sure.
Yeah, basically any question that is about the police, like why won't the police release the surveillance tapes of Maura? They will in other cases. We can't answer that. We can simply say that any footage that has been released in a very strategic way. And to say anything more would be to just speculate and make stuff up.
How come, from Jack, how come there isn't more focus on the surrounding neighbors around where the accident took place? And I think there will be.
Right.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, this is a 6-part series.
It's just getting going.
Right.
From Alex, now that the Oxygen series is finished, though still airing, are you guys closer to finishing your own documentary? Has this project changed the scope of our own documentary? I would say only in that we kind of revert back to our original intent, which was the people who were obsessed with this case and who look into this case on a day-to-day basis. But as you know, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen here?
Right. We got a lot of people talking about bus driver, exclamation points. It's the bus driver. Again, this is a 6-part series, and try not to be so quick to judgment on what you've seen in this first episode. Every character that's being introduced has something that you can look at and you can form your opinion as you dig in a little bit deeper.
From Ariana, was Fred willing to talk to this series versus you guys or anyone else? Maggie and the Texas crew give Renner plenty of time, even in this first episode. Yeah, they do. It's a theory and an angle of Maura's disappearance that does need to be looked at. It needs to be investigated and explained, either explained away or looked further into. So they are going to give him... They're going to give him some time, and they're going to look into it. Fred and the Murray family have participated in this show. So that's pretty awesome, because they have a wealth of information in this case.
Lance, you know buying glasses can be expensive, annoying, and overwhelming. And I know you know that because I have perfect vision and you wear glasses or contacts. So Warby Parker has the answer. Have you heard of them?
Of course I've heard of Warby Parker. I had a pair of glasses. I went through several pairs of glasses. I had a pair of glasses, I would say probably 5-6 years ago, and I didn't like them. I thought I liked them. I thought they looked good. One day I walked down to the Warby Parker store in Boston. They come up to you and they look at the shape of your face, and I have a very strangely shaped face. It's very like Elephant Man-like. So they were able to match the Warby Parker frame to my monstrosity. Either way, Hellboy or Elephant Man, you need the right glasses to fit your face, which they did, and I've had since.
By cutting out the middleman and selling directly to customers online and in their stores, Warby Parker is able to provide high-quality, great-looking eyewear at a fraction of the usual price.
When you go into your eye doctor and you get fitted for your glasses, sometimes you're looking at $300 or $400 for these frames, and you get the right lenses, and it takes, you know, time to fit them. And they usually don't even look that good, but Warby Parker's glasses start at $95 because they cut out the middleman. That's including prescription lenses. Lenses include anti-glare, anti-scratch coatings. I remember back in the day, you'd have to pay extra for these things.
You might be thinking, how can you possibly buy eyeglasses online? Well, with Warby Parker's completely free home try-on program, you can. Order 5 pairs of glasses online and have them shipped directly to your home or office. And then you have 5 days to try them on and show them to friends and family for an honest opinion on what looks best. So go to Warby, that's W-A-R-B-Y, Parker.com/missing to get started with a free home try-on. That's WarbyParker.com/missing to find your perfect pair of glasses today. What are your thoughts on the 1 hour time frame missing from Craig? What do you think, Lance?
Well, the 1 hour time frame missing, I mean, clearly suggests, and you can take it as 1 hour, right? Mm-hmm. Or you can take it as maybe 45 minutes, 50 minutes. You don't know the conditions that the, you know what the conditions might have been during that time frame with the weather and the roads, but you don't really know how fast she was driving. So yeah, you can probably say between a half hour and 1 hour. But it certainly does suggest that there was a stop somewhere along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. There's something there. There's something in that, in that mystery right there. In that 1 hour that's missing that could tell a lot. So here's a question from Shanna, who has not seen the series. Can we give a quick update or quick mention of what happened in Mora's Mystery? So Maura Murray was a 21-year-old college student who drove from the University of Massachusetts to the White Mountains of New Hampshire, and on a hairpin turn near the White Mountains, she spun her car out. The police were called by neighbors, and before the police arrived, Maura was gone.
Right. It's always really remarkable to me how many people we encounter that don't know about the case because we're so deeply entrenched in the case. And then to get somebody who says, can you tell me what happened, is so weird to me sometimes that you'd have to go back to actually formulating a 6-sentence synopsis. Mm-hmm. Because once you dig into it, it gets so deep.
Michelle here is saying 1 hour could have been the ATM or the liquor store. She could have stopped to eat or get gas. And Art mentioned this, and they exactly debated this in the show. It's possible, but we don't know. So it's we can't say one way or another that right. That happened. There's no receipt that we know of.
There's no credit card transaction. Mm-hmm. So, but this is where the theories start. This is where the spark happens with theories. So now we've introduced this period of time that could be 45 minutes or an hour. Mm-hmm. And now people are going to say, well, she could have done this and she could have met this person and they could have, you know, gone to a rental car place and done this. So this is where the speculation starts. But just keep in mind that it's probably very simple. She probably stopped to grab some food.
Yeah. Could be something simple like that. Why all the liquor? From Doreen. Great question.
Yeah.
That's certainly one that we don't have an answer to now. Hopefully the TV show can get a little further with that one.
All I have to say is, if you're asking why all the liquor, think back to when you were 21 years old or 22 years old or 23, early 20s. and you were going on a trip and you were traveling by yourself and you bought a lot of liquor, why would you be doing that?
Yeah. From Aisha, do you guys still suspect foul play? And I think that's probably a misconception. We really have not given our theory at all. So I would say no to any question like that. Do you guys still suspect blank? We're going where the information takes us.
Mm-hmm.
From Judith, what do you think about her sister never being interviewed by the police? I guess that's personally.
I think that is an oversight in police work if that is actually the case.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. They should have absolutely interviewed Julie Murray and Kathleen Murray and Kurt and Fred Jr., all of the siblings, just in case. Even if they didn't think there was anything there, you just got to be careful. From Hazel, I used to babysit Maura, Julie, and Kathleen. I grew up next to them, and Fred was always devoted to all of the children, and it breaks my heart that Lori passed away not having any answers. Lori, of course, is Maura's mom. Do you have your own theory, is her question. And again, I'll repeat, no, not really.
The best thing that we can do for this case is continue the path that we have been on since the beginning, which is to not have a theory and to just try to put forward the most responsible information that we have attained and that people have brought forward. The production company that made the show and the network that released the show is the best outlet for any answers that might come about in this case.
Mm-hmm.
So my theory is that the people who are working on it right now will have the best chance to bring some sort of closure to it.
Yeah. From April, I used to live a couple of miles from the accident site. Route 112 is twisty and curvy. I don't believe she was drinking while driving on that road. Great point brought up in the show, and they really showed it better than anything that's ever been out there, is how windy and Maggie says it in the show, right? She says, I would have, if I was drunk right now, I would have crashed before this point.
Yep. And without Maggie even knowing that we had said that too. When we first went up there, that was one of the first things we noticed. Once you start getting into that 112 and you start going around these corners, you instantly say, if I was drinking getting up to this point, I would have crashed a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I don't believe that she was as drunk as a lot of people make her out to be.
If she was drinking at all.
Right.
From Sonia, in the show, you guys say you have no theories. Do you guys still have no theories? I would say, yes, that's true. That is true. We still have no theories. We're waiting for the show. I want to hear what happens at the end of the show. Maybe we'll have a theory at the end of the show. From Sherry, dogs lost her scent. Does that mean she was picked up?
Okay, so the dogs within 100-yard radius of the accident lost her scent, and usually that's the case. If dogs lose the scent so abruptly, it doesn't mean that if she ran into the woods, they would follow the scent into the woods.
Yeah.
If she walked back to the car, they would follow the scent back to the car. It seems like she was picked up.
Seems like
it. I mean, just based on that's what they said.
But the dogs also got the scent of a leather glove that was potentially very new that Maura hasn't worn much. And so there's definitely still some conjecture on that.
Especially when having a bunch of other objects and personal effects that she had worn in the car that they could have used.
Mm-hmm. From Christy, was there any CCTV from any business along the route before the accident to possibly narrow that hour down? Great question. And no, not that we know of.
Not that we know of, but that doesn't mean that the police have some idea or some sort of record of these things. There is the infamous Londonderry ping of a cell phone, and we don't have enough time to get into that now, but watch the show, and they'll probably address that. And Alexis says, wow, with 3 exclamation points. Exactly.
Okay, from Scott, anything good that comes out of this new focus on the cases because of you guys and James Renner? Thank you, Scott. I don't know. I mean, there's obviously been a lot of attention that's been brought on this case because of James Renner's blog and because of our podcast. So in some ways that's true, but it's definitely not completely true at all. Right? Am I wrong?
No, you're right. You're right. But there's a lot of other people that help with this.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So Caroline says, has Mora's computer been checked?
And we're saying her laptop that was at UMass.
Was it her laptop? I don't know that.
That they checked her laptop.
It was her laptop and not a desktop computer?
From what I understand, it was a laptop.
Hmm. See, you're breaking new information now.
Yeah.
To me, at least. I don't know. The police have had her computer. So they had her computer. As far as we know, they checked it and they gleaned the information that they can from it. That's all we have to tell you about. Right.
And there were searches that they found on her computer that have since been explained away or explained in a logical way. So
Lance, you have a pet. I have a pet. Have you ever lost a pet? How terrifying of an experience would that be?
You know, I did lose a pet. I lost a dog when I was really little, and it is sad and terrifying. Dog never came back.
Well, what if I were to tell you about this new product called Whistle? And Whistle is a device that attaches to your pet's collar and allows you to track their location and activity all from an app on your phone. And it's super lightweight. My dog is 6 pounds, and she's fine walking around the block with it around her neck.
And you actually use this for your dog, Brady, right?
I do.
And you're happy with it.
I do. Yeah, we are, because most of the time I just open the door and she just kind of runs outside and she'll run around the house and go wherever she wants. But I can watch her, or at least track her on my phone just inside, because I'm not going to follow her around. And I know that she's not going to leave the property. So she's not going to walk down the street or anything like that. So, But that's case specific.
Very case specific. How does the device work, though?
Well, it uses GPS and AT&T's cellular network to monitor your pet 24/7 anywhere in the U.S. And using Wi-Fi, set up places where your pet spends most of their time and get notified when they leave and return to their safe place. For my dog, it would be one of three places. She rarely leaves the couch. When she's not on the couch, it's in her bed. When she's not in one of those two places, she'd be in her other bed.
If I were to use this on my cat, it'd be like, you know, Face is probably at Starbucks. Sometimes she goes down to the gym, does a little yoga and a little cardio. She's got an active lifestyle, so it really would help a lot for Face, I think.
Yeah, definitely. So Whistle brings peace of mind to pet owners across the nation. For a limited time, all of our listeners can get $25 off a Whistle device when you use our code MISSING. So go to whistle.com right now and use code MISSING at checkout.
Whistle, the smarter way to care for your best friend.
The show indicated that there were some quote-unquote sketchy people in the area with skeletons in their closet. Thoughts?
I think there are sketchy people with skeletons in their closets anywhere.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Okay, what difference can the FBI provide that the police cannot? Great question, because there's been a great effort to get the FBI not so much involved, but to take over this case. So what is it that the FBI can offer that the police cannot?
I think they can offer fresh eyes, a fresh approach, a non-biased approach. I think a lot of people, whether they subscribe to the theory that the police are covering something up, and I don't think that I'm saying this in a way where this is our theory, but people do think that the police are covering something up, whether it's a botched investigation or whether they're covering up for their own. Mm. What the FBI can do is come in with federal jurisdiction and take over an investigation. And I think a lot of people outside of that region would like to see that, because they feel like the FBI would take charge and indiscriminately get answers.
From Rebecca, Love your podcast and this documentary so far. The segment with her dad, Fred, was heartbreaking. I hope all the investigation and public interest can finally bring a resolution to her missing case and peace to the family. However, I strongly believe the police are covering something up. First off, yes, the scene with Fred was quite touching.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe Maura what did she score? 1420 on her SATs?
14. I thought it went up to like 1200, by the way.
16, I think. Oh. But that's incredible. it was heartbreaking. That scene with her with Fred was heartbreaking, seeing the pictures that Maura drew.
Yep.
Just seeing all the video footage and the early pictures of her, it was touching. Now,
I strongly believe police are covering up something, and this big question is why. Take a step back and understand that they failed to recognize what we all recognize today, which is she's been gone for 13 years, over 13 years. At the time, they are more familiar with cars being left on the side of the road and people abandoning their cars while they sober up and picking them up later on. And if they're guilty of anything before any sort of investigation happens against or towards the Haverhill Police Department, it's they behaved in a way that they're used to behaving. When you look at the police logs, it says has the female showed up at the cabin, meaning the cabin hospital.
Mm-hmm. A cottage.
I'm sorry. Has the female showed up at the cottage, meaning the cottage hospital.
Right.
They fully expected whoever was with that car to show up later.
Mm.
They were just walking around sobering up before because they found alcohol, what they believed to be alcohol, around the car. So you can see where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is just try not to initially jump on that police conspiracy because you're going to overwhelm yourself.
Yeah, definitely have an open mind about that and everything because I think this series is going to be a real roller coaster. And I think you're going to change your opinion a lot throughout the course of this series. From Hallie, please someone explain the rag and the tailpipe. I am confused. Great question. One of the more interesting aspects of the case. Of course, when Maura's car was found, there was a rag in the tailpipe found there as well.
Biggest red herring. Like Alfred Hitchcock couldn't have written it better. Biggest red herring in the whole case. Rag in the tailpipe.
Well, but by calling it a red herring, though, you're saying that it's not a valuable piece of information.
At this point, I don't think it's a valuable piece of information.
Okay. Well, we won't exactly say why yet. Maybe that comes up later in an episode. Why does Maura's brother refer to his dad as Fred? I find that odd. From Caroline. Sorry, that's a pterodactyl.
Sorry, there's a moth in here.
There's a pterodactyl in here.
for some reason loves my face.
Caroline, Maura's brother, Kurt, is not Fred's son. He is Maura's half-brother, right?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So that is why Maura's brother, Kurt, would refer to Fred as Fred. So we got a few questions on that. From Marianne, why do you think Renner said he came close to finding her?
Because I think Renner thinks that he came close to finding her.
Okay. from Judith, maybe she was walking on the side of the road because she was drunk driving and leaving the accident. What if someone hit her while walking in the dark and hit her body? This is a theory we do hear a lot.
Yep.
What if someone hit her accidentally and then put her body in their trunk and then drove out of the area? All well and good, but we don't have any evidence of that. We don't have any noise to suggest that that's what happened.
Right. So what I say to Judith is keep looking at that. That's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not shot down.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. From Sarah, nursing school nearly drove me to the brink of a mental breakdown. I'm speculating that she needed a break and took off for a few days. Thus the lie about the death in the family and needing a week off. And then something went horribly wrong. No question, but a good observation from Sarah, probably something that is a good possibility.
Yeah, and that's where you should start if you're looking at this case and you want to... look at it as in you know, a citizen detective standpoint and with citizen detective eyes, definitely look at that. She simply, you are on the brink of a mental breakdown and she needed to make something up and she needed to get away. So that's a start from there.
From Scott, and probably the last question we'll take here. From Scott, I feel that Maura was a type A personality and a perfectionist. I think the events in the months leading up to her disappearance, credit card fraud, wrecking her father's new car, led Maura to flee because she couldn't meet her family's expectations. What do you guys think?
Sure. I think that there were many things that were happening in Maura's life that caused her to need some time off. And that's not even making anything up. If you look at the situation, she was alone in the car when the car had the accident and she had left. So it's like kind of a literal explanation.
Yeah.
She had pressure on her. She wanted to get away and that's what happened. So it was tragic. Caroline Reeves, were her credit cards ever used? No. Credit cards or cell phones were never, credit card or cell phone was, it was never any use on either of those.
Yeah. As far as we know, her keys and wallet was never discovered. Okay. I think that's probably
one up there
about it. You want
just
one
a real quick,
this
a
one?
Real
go
quick
for
one.
It. Yeah, go for it real quick.
Christina, did they say how much she withdrew from the ATM? She withdrew most of her money. It was $280 from her bank account.
Yep.
Most of her money.
Yep. As much as the ATM would allow her to take out. I think that's the case.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure that's the case. Lance. I don't know. Well, thank you. Thanks for backing me up on that.
Yeah, that was the case. Yeah. ATMs had a $280 limit.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for listening here on Oxygen on Facebook Live. We will be back next week for another Facebook Live. And please tune in next Saturday night for The Disappearance of Maura Murray, Episode 2. There's going to be 6 of these.
What's the time next week? Because it's different from this week, right?
It says here 7 p.m. Eastern and a replay at 9 p.m. But check your local listings.
Christy, thank you.
Thank you, everybody,
thank you, everybody
for watching.
Yeah. And we'll be I won't shake the table as much next time.
Thank you for
Thanks,
listening.
Thanks, guys.